Little Foxes by Michael Morpurgo, Chapter 8. As the day wore on, the sun beat relentlessly down on their backs. Billy was glad for it, for it dried his soaking clothes as he walked. But with only stream water inside them, both boy and fox began to weaken. As he tired, Billy began to take more risks, and in his anxiety to get as far as possible from the city before nightfall, he became careless. Where before he had kept close to the edges of fields, hugging the hedgerows, now he would take the shortest route, walking openly out across fields where they might be seen from the farmhouses. He knew well enough that they were more exposed to discovery on the roads than anywhere else, and until now he had been scrupulously careful to ensure that there was no one about, no traffic approaching before crossing, and he had always picked up the fox and carried him across. But when, in the late afternoon, they came to a narrow, winding lane, he did not even bother to pick up the fox and gave only a cursory glance down the lane. He was about halfway across and whistling for the fox to follow him when the little girl on the bicycle came round the bend fast. She skidded to a halt on the gravelly road, using her feet for brakes. "Didn't you see?" she said. "Haven't you got no brakes? Busted!" As she spoke, the fox walked nonchalantly out across the road towards Billy, belatedly obeying his call. "Hey, isn't that a fox?" she said. "No, it isn't," said Billy. "He is," she said. "I seen him in books, and my dad shot one once when it came around the fowls. A fox, that is. That's a fox." "Just looks like a fox," said Billy. "'Tisn't really." The girl, he thought, was a little younger than he was, with long blonde pigtails and an open smiling face. The kind, Billy thought, that would talk a lot. He would have to be convincing. "Looks like a fox, I know," he said. "Everyone says so, but it's just a funny kind of sheepdog. Still a puppy he is, really. I mean, you've never heard of a fox you could stroke, have you? I mean, the wild animals, foxes are. Like wolves they are, sort of. Take your hand off, they would. Give them half a chance." And he crouched down and stroked the fox's neck, burying his fingers in the soft fur. "Good dog," he said. "Good dog. See? Quiet as a mouse he is. No need to be frightened of him. He won't hurt you. Wouldn't hurt a fly, would you? Come on, you have a go." The girl stepped off her bike and laid it down in the middle of the road. "You sure he's all right?" she said, approaching nervously. And the fox sat quite still, looking up at Billy for reassurance. And Billy felt his whole body stiffen as the girl touched him. And when his ears went back on his head, Billy feared he might be betrayed, but as the girl relaxed, her petting became less tentative, and she was soon smoothing him all over and enjoying it. "Never seen a dog like this before," she said. "Suppose it'll look proper when it's grown up." "Suppose so," said Billy, much relieved at the success of his ruse, but conscious of the fact that a car could come down the road at any moment, and that the driver might not be so gullible as this girl. "You'd better pick up your bike before someone comes round that bend. Got to be going now." And he opened the field gate and whistled for the fox to come after him, and then walked away out into the field as casually as he could. "Where are you going?" called the girl, following him to the gate. "Home," said Billy, waving his hand above his head. "Where's that?" she cried. But Billy pretended he'd not heard and walked on a little faster. Not so fast that it could be thought he was running away, but fast enough to get away from her questions. "My dad's a farmer, and he says you should ought to keep dogs on the lead. They'll end up chasing sheep else, and you ought to shut gates. Don't you know that?" On the brow of the hill, Billy looked back over his shoulder to be sure he was not being followed, and she was gone. He broke into a run, cursing himself aloud for his carelessness. And after that, exhausted as he was, he took no more risks. He had had his warning and did not ignore it. As evening came on, his stomach began to ache with hunger, and he could think of little else but food. He thought of raiding vegetable gardens, of stealing eggs, and even venturing into a village under the cover of darkness to rifle the dustbins. But the dread of capture was stronger even than the nagging hunger pains that tugged at his stomach. He found talking helped him to forget, provided he could avoid the subject of food, but somehow it always came back to that. By nightfall, they still had had nothing to eat. The last red of the sun bled into the clouds above the glowing city in the distance. Billy sat with his fox on the bracken hillside. "Looks pretty from here," he said, "but we're never going back there, you and me. We don't belong there, do we? Only sensible thing Auntie May ever said to me. Do you remember? She said, we belong out here in the wilds together. Well, we do, don't we?" The fox sat trim beside him, attentive, alertive to every sound of the encroaching night. "Mind you," said Billy, "I could do with some of her baked beans, couldn't you? Wouldn't even say no to a corned beef sandwich, and I know you wouldn't, would you? Yes, you're right, best not to talk about it, only makes it worse." But he was too tired even to talk now. He beat the bracken around him into a soft bed and lay back in it, turned on his side, his knees drawn up to his chin, and was asleep almost at once. But the fox did not sleep. Not yet, anyway. For him, food came before sleep. He went out hunting in the woods just above where Billy lay. He'd been hunting before, but it was never as urgent then as it was now. He was slow and inexperienced, but hunger had sharpened his reactions, and after being given the runaround by an irritating field mouse that had mastered the art of vanishing, he cornered and at last exhausted a field vole and killed it. But this first kill seemed only to stimulate his appetite. He spent most of the night high up in the woods above where Billy slept, stalking and pouncing, ineffectually trying to repeat his early success. But with the dew coming down in the early morning, the worms came wriggling to the surface in the soft earth of the forest tracks, and the fox treated himself to a feast off them before he returned to snuggle up tight against Billy's chest. He curled his tail over his nose and slept. Morning came too soon for both of them. Billy had slept fitfully. Whichever side he chose to sleep on soon lost all feeling, and the pins and needles that followed were excruciating. When he woke, his neck was stiff, and he went through and shivering with cold, and there were church bells ringing somewhere in the misty valley below him, and a cow lowing mournfully. A persistent invisible pigeon called gently from above him in the trees, and a pair of circling buzzards mewed plaintively overhead. Billy watched as a gang of raucous rooks moved in to worry them. The fox stiffened suddenly beside him at the bark of a dog. Billy was not alarmed, for it seemed to him to be harmless enough and still far away. But then there was the murmur of voices, a hooting laugh, and Billy was on his feet and running. He followed the fox up the hillside and into the shelter of the trees. As they ran in under the trees, a gunshot blasted behind them, and the wood emptied itself noisily of every bird. The fox ran on ahead, the way he had gone the night before, and Billy ran after him, stumbling over the dead branches that the fox leapt so easily. Another gunshot echoed along the valley behind them, and Billy did not know whether the shots were aimed at them. The fox seemed to know, and that was enough for him. And suddenly there were no more trees, and Billy was out in the bright sunlight and tearing downhill towards a stream. And beyond the stream was a forest of conifer trees that climbed the hillside in serried lines. There was cover in there. If they could reach the trees, Billy felt they had some chance. The fox loped across the open field, hesitated at the stream, but then bounded across and up into the trees beyond. Billy splashed through the water after him and plunged into the forest before turning to see if they were being followed. He crouched in the shadows and watched. Not 50 paces from them, two men came out into the field, each of them carrying a gun, a little Jack Russell Terrier sniffing the ground around them. "I saw it," said one of them. "Big it was and brown. I saw it, honest. Could have been a deer even. Gone to cover in the Brigadier's wood. He's got dozens of them in there. He won't notice if there's one missing, will he? Come on, let's go in after him. It's worth a bit, is a deer. Look, the dog's after him. He's got his scent. I told you. And sure enough, the little Jack Russell was bustling down through the grass towards them, yapping as he came. Upward was the only way to go. Billy dug his toes into the soft earth and forced his legs to run. The fox needed no whistling on now. He trotted uneasily in front, tongue hanging out. They could hear behind them that the hunters were in the woods too, and that the yapping terrier was coming even closer. And Billy ran now because the fox ran, and he drove himself on, pounding the air with his arms, whispering through gritted teeth, "Faster, faster, faster, don't stop, don't stop." With the forest behind them filling with excited voices, they reached a forest path at the top of the hill, and the fox immediately turned right as if he knew the way. So Billy followed him. Billy sensed that the fox was leading him somewhere, and he was far too tired to argue. When the fox left the track and bounded up the bank into more trees, Billy clambered after him. It was a different forest now, with great tall oaks clinging dangerously to the hillside. Many had fallen, their roots ripped out, leaving vast craters where young saplings were sprouting again. And as they ran on and up, Billy saw the fox slowing. He was looking around him as he went, no longer intent, it seemed, on escape. The measured rhythm was gone from his stride, and Billy found himself running alongside him, even ahead of him sometimes. Fatigue overcame Billy now as he laboured on. Fatigue brought on by the knowledge that he had not thrown off their pursuers. Below in the woods they could hear them crushing through the undergrowth, and always that shrill, incessant yapping that was leading the hunters inexorably towards them. The fox had paused by one of the craters and quite suddenly vanished among the roots. Billy whistled for him, but the fox did not reappear, so Billy went down into the crater after him. The earth still clung to the roots that towered now over Billy. On earth wall, on twisted roots, and at the base of it a hole that must have been torn out of the hillside when the tree fell. It seemed to lead in behind the wall of roots, and at the mouth of the hole he saw the white muzzle of the fox. Billy had no idea how big the hole might be inside, but the hunters were so close now that there was no time for debate. He thrust himself into the hole, arms and head first, but his shoulders stuck fast. He kicked out furiously with his legs and groped in the dark for something on which he could haul himself in, and he found it, a gnarled root that was strong enough to take all his weight. And once inside, he looked for the fox and found two eyes staring back at him out of the dark. He gathered the fox to him and crawled to the back of the earth cave and waited. Whatever happened, he would never allow the fox to be taken from him.